This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Gardening is our topic this afternoon. Three guests join us to answer your questions about flowers, trees, shrubs, and vines. Here with me in the studio are Diane Noland and Mike Brunk. On the phone with us this afternoon, William Kalina. Diane Noland is the host of Illinois Gardener on our companion station, WILL-TV. She's also a teaching associate in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. Mike Brunk is the arborist for the city of Urbana. And Bill Kalina is the nursery manager and propagator at the Garden in the Woods, the showplace of the New England Wildflower Society. The Garden in the Woods features naturalistic displays of native plants organized by Habitat. Bill is also the author of Growing and Propagating Wildflowers and the soon-to-be-published Native Trees, Shrubs, and Vines. That book will be off the press next month, early next month. We've talked with Bill once before, a couple of years ago, about wildflowers, so I want to say welcome back to all three of our panelists, and I want to invite listeners to join us with questions about this topic, gardening. We have a terrific panel here. Here are the telephone numbers if you'd like to talk with our guests. In Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455, and toll-free, our number 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Bill Kalina, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Celeste. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And our thanks this afternoon and welcome and hellos to Diane Noland and Mike Brunk.
Hi, let's take a field trip to Bill's.
Sounds
good.
Love
to have you.
Right after the show.
So how is your garden growing out there? I know you've been hit by drought, right? The East Coast? Bill? Oh, my goodness. I think we've lost Bill Kalina. We'll have to get him back on the line. Meantime, what have you two been up to?
I did a little weeding last weekend.
And I've been walking in the woods looking at wildflowers.
Yeah.
It's been a nice spring right up until those 480-degree days.
I know.
Yeah. And I didn't really want those because it made daffodils were just gone. And I missed Dutchman's breeches this year. I saw two little plants.
It was so fast.
It was so fast.
Yeah, Friday afternoon I came out of the house and the bluebells looked like...
Oh, it's gorgeous.
They were... It was so warm. And it had been kind of dry.
Mm-hmm.
So they looked like they would appreciate a nice cool rain. And that's what we got.
Like this week.
Yeah.
It was the same way with the magnolia trees. They came out...
Oh,
and they were gorgeous.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, it was just quick.
Yeah.
Quick this year.
Yeah, we had a poll in one of my classes, and the longest that anyone had them was 5 days, but 3 days was the average. 3 to 5 days, and we look for them all year. So it's the nature of the Midwest.
Yeah, everything
certainly
ran so far ahead. I know that I have some beautiful bloodroot in the backyard, and I really try and keep an eye on that because the seeds, you know, when they're ready to go. They're ready to go, and they wait for no one. So I think I missed them because they ripened so quickly. And let's just hope the ants did their job and carried them off.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
It really is.
Because that's how they do such a nice job of naturalizing.
Yes, they do.
But I like to help them along.
Right. And that's our job.
And let's see. We don't have Bill Kalina back on the line yet. I'm wondering what's happening. Well, tell us, Mike, about the trees in the city of Urbana, beautiful tree city, USA.
Well, we're in the throes of tree planting. We're about 3/4 of the way through. And in fact, we've got a new tree that we're trying out this spring. Happens to be an Illinois native tree, Kentucky coffee tree, which we've planted many times before, but we are trying the cultivar Prairie Titan. And it's a male clone that would be fruitless.
Interesting.
There's another male clone Kentucky coffee tree that we're searching for that I haven't found yet that is called Espresso. And it's supposedly propagated from a coffee tree on the quad at the University of Illinois that's fruitless.
Great name.
So,
what was the first cultivar again?
Prairie Titan.
Prairie Titan, and then Espresso.
The fun one, Espresso.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great,
isn't it?
Well, I know that back when we were in Gregory Hall, there is there's a beautiful coffee tree right outside the window. I think on Wright Street, right outside the building.
It's very likely.
Wouldn't doubt it.
We were standing in the woods where I live near the Salt Fork River, and we had one that was probably, 2 feet around and looks straight up, and they're very coarse, but these do have fruits.
Now, how did you pick Prairie Titan, Mike?
I was looking for specifically, I had a request from one of my citizens to find a fruitless coffee tree, so I went on a search, and a nursery outside of Chicago had a clone called Prairie Titan, so I got several of them.
Okay. While we try and get Bill Kalina on the line, let's talk with a listener who's waiting to talk with us on line one in Champaign County. Hi.
Yes, hello. I have a question for Mike. I have a ginkgo tree that's about 15 years old, and its lower limbs really need to be trimmed up. I've been giving it quite a long time since it was a transplant, so now they're bigger than they really ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned about when it would be safe to trim those off, what time of year, and how many I can do. And the thing I'm most concerned about is the trunk's about a 5-inch trunk where it needs to start being trimmed. And all the limbs that need to come off are interposed each other at almost exactly the same level. So I'm kind of concerned, and all the limbs are about an inch or more. I'm concerned about coming, very close to girdling the tree, and I know that that would be very bad. How much and when would you suggest I take those off? Maybe one a year or something like that?
Those are very good questions. The general rule of thumb, first of all, is you never want to take more than one-third or one-quarter, if you want to be real conservative, one-quarter of the foliage off in any given season. So that's one guideline. Secondly, a good time to prune is now, really a little earlier, but now's not bad. The wound will heal over faster when it's pruned in late winter or early spring. And thirdly, on a whirl of branches like that, we come across this often in the city when we go down our streets and sidewalks and have to raise the tree. And we're always comfortable when we take one whorl off. The problem a lot of times happens, though, when you take more than one branch off that's in vertical alignment, because the foliage on that tree pulls the nutrients and the moisture up to the branches. And when you take too much off of one side, it loses some of that, and you can get dieback. So I think you're safe with the whole whorl. If you really want to play it safe, it wouldn't hurt to do it over a two-year period, but I think you're safe taking the entire whorl off.
So it would be super safe to take, say, two of them off that were adipose to each other and the next year go for the other two?
I think that's a very good move. And
okay.
Again, look at that one-quarter rule of the canopy. Never...
Well, it's not too much of the canopy, but it just happens to be the largest branches. It's quite tall, but there'd still probably be... oh, maybe 80% of the canopy, the tree left after I took these four branches off.
I think you could go either way, and if you want to be conservative and maybe feel a little better, do the opposing branches 1 year and then come back and do the other two the next year.
Okay, thanks. And can you also tell me, when they're too big for the large loppers, what's the best thing to try to use so you get a very flat, even cut that makes no burrs on the outside?
Well, even better than loppers are... saws that are specifically made for pruning limbs. And I should say to always prune that limb out a foot or so from the trunk first and get the weight off of it so it doesn't tear.
Okay.
If you use a good sharp saw, you can make a clean cut. You want to look at the top. The final cut should be leaving the bark ridge, which is a little raised area between the branch and the trunk. And you want to leave that. You do not want to cut into that. And in a lot of branches on the bottom, you can see the swell where the branch attaches to the trunk, and you want to leave that as well.
Okay.
Now, we have a publication in this area called the Tree Growing Guide for Central Illinois, and it has some visual illustrations in there showing that very thing. A lot of the garden centers, too, have these little pruning saws made specifically for pruning branches, and that's what I'd recommend.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. Mike, you mentioned the tree growing guide for Central Illinois. Is this available through the city of Urbana or other communities through their public works departments?
Yes, actually, we went in together, the cities of Decatur, Urbana, Champaign, and Bloomington, and produced this piece. So any one of those cities should be carrying a copy. Typically, it's at the public works office of the communities. Or in Champaign-Urbana, we also have stocked them at the Urbana Free Library and I believe the Champaign Library. They are available at the Farmers Market at Lincoln Square.
Okay, which opens next month already, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful guide.
It's specifically written to answer the common questions a homeowner has for planting trees and shrubs around their private property.
Okay, very good. And Bill Kalina, I think you're back with us now.
Hopefully.
Oh.
At least for now. I don't know what's going on with our phone system, but all of a sudden, you know, right when we're on the air, everything goes dead. So.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you back. And before we lost you, I wanted to know how things were in your neck of the woods in terms of gardens, and particularly the garden in the woods, because I know that the East Coast has seen a lot of drought.
Well, it's funny. You wouldn't know it from just looking around. I think it's the ground is moist, but the reservoirs are low. That's kind of the key thing, is that towns that are worried about the reservoirs are really cutting back on water restrictions. We're getting enough rain so that the ground is moist enough. And we've had a lot of warm weather, too, so things are a good week or 10 days ahead of where they normally are.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. We're way ahead, I think.
Did you get any snow the last few days? We had a few snow flurries yesterday. So.
No, cold rain over the weekend.
I had a heavy frost this morning when I woke up, but no snow.
But last week was in the 80s, and in some parts of our listening area, it was in the 90s last week.
Yeah, we hit 90 for a couple of days in a row. Mm.
Let's talk with another listener. Let's go to the toll-free line and talk to a listener in Downs. Hi.
Hi. Everyone I can talk to, I talk about my shady places. We live at the edge of essentially sugar maple woods. So I've got lots and lots of shade, but in particular on the north side of the house, I've got deep eaves, and there are terraces going down the side of the house, and I want something shrubby to plant there. I've got a couple of blackhop viburnums that are doing very well. Do you have any other suggestions? This time of year, they get some afternoon sun because the trees haven't leafed out yet to the west. In the height, you know, after the solstice, they really don't get any direct sun, and there's a maple tree fairly close by. Ideas?
Bill, you want to help?
What do you think about the moisture there? I mean,
I can give it as much moisture as it needs. I'm committed to having to water that because it's under these eaves.
Well, let's see. How does the oak leaf hydrangea do out in your neck of the woods?
I have an oak leaf hydrangea that I have just moved there. I had to move it from an area that was going to have some construction going on, and so I'm hoping it's going to do okay. I always wish it got more sun, but
yeah, they don't always bloom that well.
Well, you know, the blackhawks don't bloom either, and that's okay. I don't expect them to bloom.
What kind of space do you have overhead? How tall? One story? Or?
It's one story at one end and two story at the other. It goes down the side of a hill.
We have some bottle brush buckeye in a shady area under a tree.
Is it going to get too wide?
Well, they get big.
You
know, 8 or 10 feet
round.
So
if I planted it up fairly close to the house, the terraces are 8 feet deep.
Plant material like that, a lot of times, it depends what your siding is, but it will naturally shape itself against a flat wall.
Now,
some of the drawback may be, and I've seen this, that if you have a stained siding, for example, it may rub on it and cause it to look not so good in the fall and winter and early spring months.
Well, down at the shadiest end, it's really the concrete foundation that we would have. You know,
a couple other shady shrubs that I like. I mean, some of the other viburnums might be good to try, like the Well, it's suffering a name change right now. The Viburnum cassinoides or nudum, very pretty, more of a glossy leaf, a little larger leaf than the possum haw. And have you ever? It's a little harder to find, but leatherwood is a beautiful shrub.
You know, I've read about it, and I have never seen it. Never seen it locally. I'm not a big mail orderer, but
yeah, it's a little hard to find, but it's a great shrub because it. I describe it as the limbs grow out of all proportion for the size of the plant, so it develops this really thickened trunk and thickened branches, and it's very much a shade species. It likes to grow in the shade, but it is a little slow growing at first, and I think that's part of the reason nurseries don't carry it as much. We grow it here, but again, I have trouble when I recommend that to people. Knowing that it's a little harder to find.
Uh-huh.
What's the scientific name of that?
Dirca, D-I-R-C, C-A, palustris.
Okay.
And what was the second?
Palustris, which means swamp.
Okay. And what were the viburnum?
Viburnum nudum is a nice one. There's a cultivar of the arrowwood viburnum that the Chicago Botanic Garden, I think, put out called Chicago Luster, which is a really nice. Typical arrowwood has kind of a dull leaf, and this one has a very shiny leaf.
Okay. Well, those are some good suggestions. Can I ask another question?
Sure, go ahead.
I have created kind of a meandering bed that goes down just to the north of these terraces. It gets a little more sun, especially, again, before as the sun moves south. And then as it retreats, it gets less. And I'd like to, there's one place where it's about 5 feet wide, and I'd like to put a shrub in there to kind of create a focal point. It would have to be not too high growing and something that's not going to need an enormous amount of sun, but will get especially spring sun.
Diane, I was just thinking of buttonbush, which has nice white rounded flowers very late in the season, August. And mine, I think I've had it 4 or 5 years, and it's probably 5 feet tall and maybe by 5 feet apart, wide, a little bit vase-shaped at the bottom. But it's a very pretty native shrub, and it has... it's very pretty foliage, which you wouldn't maybe look at, but when it's in flower, it's very pretty.
Well, those are some good ideas.
How about the pussy willow?
Possibly.
I saw that in a yard about 2 weeks ago, actually, and it was, I'm not that familiar to know how large it gets. This was about 8 feet tall by about 4 feet wide, and it was in an understory situation.
And really, you'd have the catkins early, and that's what you want when you have the sun. Well, that's a pretty good idea, actually.
Okay. Well, good luck with those suggestions. Next, we're going to go to a listener on line two in Champaign. Hello there. Do we have a listener on line two? I can hear you.
Hello?
I think. There you are. Hello.
Yes, I can hardly hear you.
Okay. Well, we can hear you. Go ahead.
All right. I wanted to ask about pruning a dogwood. Now, I've been reading how to prune the trees, and they suggest that you do alternating branches. Well, this tree grows in fingers. It comes out in usually three at a time, and they're always opposite from one another on the trunk. But then the ones that go straight up, they'll shoot out into maybe four that are going straight up. And I'm wondering, is this tree different? Is a dogwood different? This is a Korean dogwood.
When pruning a tree, there's several things you're going to want to prune for besides aesthetics. And in fact, you want to look at problem branches first and take those out and then work on what you have left to make it look the way you want to look. And
well, when this trunk is going straight up now, it's probably... 6.5 feet where it started to go straight up, and it's gone up into four. Will that weaken that tree?
It's hard for me to say without actually looking at the tree, but...
Well, I've never seen a tree grow like this.
Here's what you want to look for. You want to remove weakened attachments and maintain the strong attachments. And the way to tell the difference is when the branch and the trunk are tight together, a V-shaped crotch,
right.
Those are the weaker ones.
Right.
So if you have a choice, look for the U-shaped crotches to save and to prune out the weak-shaped crotches. Secondly, if a branch is growing back into the tree or through the tree and is posing some problems such as rubbing or growing into another branch, those you want to remove as well.
Right, I understand that. Now, how about growing across from one another, too? That should they be more like stairs, or should
I think some the dogwoods tend to grow? Are you talking about the main stems coming from the ground have four, or they're half part way up the stem?
Part way up the stem where they first start out, and some of the lower branches are growing as tall as almost the top of the tree.
That species has a typically kind of a vase-shaped growth habit.
Mm-hmm.
So it does that where multiple stems will come out of the base and then grow up in a kind of a V shape. And that's the natural branching habit of that tree.
That's what I'm thinking, because they all seem to do it. But the one at the top is off of the main trunk. And all of these four, one is as nice as the next one. They're all about the same size. I was hoping, too, you know, some of them wouldn't develop. And then I'd take the smaller ones out.
But that's it's probably because it likes where you've got it so much, and it's getting enough sun all around it that all these branches are able to grow well. And
well, it's pretty well shaded by a larger tree in back of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're appropriately spaced and it doesn't seem to be that they're competing with each other, I would not prune it.
Well, now that's another thing. If you're doing the stair step type of pruning, how far apart do you put those or take those out, or do you just take the small ones out?
That's a good question.
Is there any designated space, like 12 inches or 6 inches?
I think the better way that I would look at it is rather than distance, is the competition between the branches. Are they growing together? Are they growing
at
each other?
That's sort of what I've been doing, but as it gets larger, I'm wondering if I should have taken more out.
And it may be nice to go to the library. See if you can look up the plant, look at its natural shape, and because that's what it's going to want to grow back to. William's right.
Right.
And you're not going to want to fight that.
No, well, that's what I'm deciding. It's winning.
Another warning, because I've made this mistake, is that dogwoods tend to weep a lot and bleed a lot if you prune them in the spring. So I know, you know, the way that a maple does. So be careful if you do any pruning in the spring, that you're going to have a lot of that bleeding from the wound.
Okay. I hope that helps our listener this afternoon. We've got some other callers waiting to talk with us. We're going to go next to a listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. You mentioned the bottle brush buckeye earlier, and I have several that I've had planted for about 3 years now. They wondering about pruning on those, if there's any that should be done, or if they should just be let go. The space I have them in, they can grow all they want. Have any suggestions?
Personally, I would not prune unless it was necessary. So I think your best bet's to let them go.
Great. Well, thank you.
Saves you a lot of work, too, doesn't it?
Certainly.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Mike Brunk, he's the arborist for the city of Urbana. Also joining me in the studio this afternoon, Diane Nolan, host of Illinois Gardener on our companion station, WILL-TV. And also with us by telephone this afternoon, Bill Kalina. He's the nursery manager and propagator at the Garden in the Woods, the showplace of the New England Wildflower Society. Listeners, your calls are welcome. Next, we're going to go to a listener waiting for us on line three in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm wondering if, by any chance, are there any wildflowers that you can grow in woods?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of wildflowers.
Lots of them.
Well, I mean, are they just early spring flowers, or are there any that also will, you know, flower or propagate throughout this summer, say, for example?
vast majority are spring blooming. They really take advantage of the this time of spring when the trees haven't leafed out yet.
There are
a few that bloom later on there. There are a few asters that bloom in the fall, and a few of the things like the bugbanes or black cohosh that bloom in the summertime.
I see. You can grow those from seed, can you?
Yeah.
Where can you get these? In terms of planting them, is it sufficient just to spread them randomly on the top of the soil, or do you need to scratch them in or things like that?
The seeds?
Yeah.
What I usually recommend people doing, because it's awfully hard, it's different than, say, if you were seeding a meadow, because in a meadow situation where you've tilled the soil, there isn't a lot of competition, but in a woodland, you've got all the tree roots in there that are going to be competing with the seedling. So what I prefer doing is creating a little seed bed area where you can improve the soil a little bit, as you would for a vegetable garden or something, and seed the plants in rows like that and then transplant them. That works a lot better. You can take a similar, an approach like that and just work up little areas around in the woods and seed directly into there. But it's hard to just send them out there competing with the tree roots on their own.
But once they get established, they do really well on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Definitely. It's just getting over that initial, and in the wild, of course, they do that, but the plants put out a lot more seed. And when you're dealing with a little seed packet or something, you want to try to get as many of those to survive as you can.
Yeah, that's right. I see.
Uh-huh. And listener, I'd suggest that you look for Bill Kalina's book, Growing and Propagating Wildflowers, at the library or in your bookstore.
What's the name again?
Growing and Propagating Wildflowers.
Oh, that sounds like it's the right topic.
It's just the book you need.
Yeah. How about getting the seeds?
That's a good question.
I've seen, what would they be, quart-sized cans or something like that, of wildflower seeds. Is that
beware?
Huh?
I'd say beware.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
You'll have introduced species. If you want the native ones, there's usually a high concentration of mixtures.
Yeah.
But in our area, you can probably look at, now this is actually Wisconsin, but the Prairie Nursery. I'd go online and see what you can find close up, but even the Natural Garden, which is in St. Charles, they've started some and have very small plants of some of these, but they also have the seed. But I don't know of closer ones, but...
There's a place up north of you in Canada called Gardens North.
I'm sorry, where?
They're up in Canada. She's up Ontario, Canada. called Gardens North, and she sells seed of a lot of the woodland species, very good quality seed.
And I can find them online?
Yeah, if you search for Gardens North.
Uh-huh, I see.
And the other thing is look for local groups that are interested in wildflowers, and because people will share.
In fact, mm-hmm. the Grand Prairie Friends is having their sale, I think it's every Mother's Day weekend, at Lincoln Square.
Oh, really?
And they have started plants, but they can also tip you off to some of these types if they don't have them for sale right there.
Uh-huh.
But they do collecting from the members.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
So they would be a great source for you. Grand Prairie Friends.
Friends. And you say they have a show or something?
They have a sale at Lincoln Square every Mother's Day weekend. I don't have the hours with me right here, but watch Illinois Gardener, and we'll be announcing it tomorrow. But I believe it's Saturday. I think you'd not go wrong if you came on the Saturday of Mother's Weekend.
Right.
Mother's Day, excuse me.
Now, you mentioned, you said National Gardens. Did you say in Springfield?
St. Charles.
St. Charles.
And then there's the Prairie Nursery, which is a Wisconsin company. But there's quite a few others. They just don't come to mind. But if you search for it, you will find a lot. And specifically mention seed.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
There's a lot of folks in Urbana I know who are great wildflower fans. So.
Who is the author of this, Growing and Propagating?
Bill Kalina. And his last name, Bill's last name is spelled C-U-L.
Uh-huh.
Lina.
And in the back of that book, there's also a number of sources, lists of sources for seeds and plants, too.
Right. How many, what sort of volume of seeds does one need to plant? If you plant them before the leaves have fallen or something like that, does that smother them in the process?
For the most part, you'll notice with woodland seeds that they're larger than their counterparts in a prairie or grassland kind of community. And part of that is because they need more energy to push up through fallen leaves. And so woodland plants in general, there's always exceptions to this, but in general, woodland plants have larger seeds, and that's partly so they're adapted to, they have more energy to push up through the leaves.
Okay.
You definitely don't want to have a huge deposit of heavy leaves, oak leaves or something like that on top of the seeds. So what we sometimes do is rake off the first batch that falls down and then let the rest fall down, so that you get sort of a half load of leaves on there.
Okay. Well, good luck with the wildflowers. And maybe the next time we all get together, you'll tell us how your wildflower garden is going. Let's move on to another listener who's waiting for us in Martinsville on the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I came in kind of late, but I wondered, can you plant and keep alive aspen in this elevation here in Central Illinois?
Aspen?
Uh-huh.
That's there's relatives of the aspen that certainly work in this area, but the aspen from Colorado would be iffy.
Do you have the quaking aspen in growing out there in Colorado? Illinois?
No.
I have a friend who brought one back, and he has a plethora of knees and roots. And
once you have one,
it's pushing up sidewalks.
It's certainly something to always try. I hear stories from people that when we go out into the street that I got this from such and such a state when we were traveling, and look how well it's doing. But I do not have experience with the aspens from out west and how well they grow here.
I thought maybe it might be elevation sensitive.
It is the same. The quaking aspen has a huge range. So the quaking aspen that you see out in Colorado is actually the same species that you can find, in the eastern U.S. But it's adapted to that climate a little bit more. So if you find some that originate from farther east, I think you'd have a lot better luck with it, and it gives you the same effect, that same, the leaves in the summer and the bark and that fall color.
Mm. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon, Mike. How does birch do in this neck of the woods?
The white bark birches are a little too far south in this area. They like a little more
cooler weather,
northern climate,
okay.
And they have a tendency to go under stress in the hot summers, and then we have an insect called the bronze birch borer that attacks them and usually does them in. They are attracted to stressed trees.
Okay. So it is a good idea to know
if you can find gray birches that have the white bark cultivar. Those will do okay, but not the white bark ones. It's the gray birch with a white cultivar, and there are not very many of them. I think white spires is maybe the only one I can think of so far.
Okay.
But they are working on that because people like them.
Sure.
Let's go to another listener, a caller in Belgium on line one. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to have a little information about a tree that is, I think it's native to Asia. And I'm going to try to say the name, but I'm probably wrong with it. It's called Paulina. It's a tree that is highly prized in Japan. And
Royal
China.
Polonia?
Polonia. That's probably the right way to say it, yes. Now, I know it grows in the southern United States to some extent. Can it grow in the Midwest? I mean, this part of the Midwest.
Right. Well, I remember when I was a student, with Dr. Durr, Michael Durr, who's the one who's written a lot of the books on trees, We would go visit one right off of Lincoln Avenue, and it was quite huge around, but our climate did not allow it to flower very often. And now it's dead. But it did live, quite a few years, but I think we're a more severe, at least this location was, but it didn't flower very often. I don't know if the flowers are zone 6 and we're zone 5. You might go to the library and look under Dirr, D-I-R-R, in his tree book. Bill, do you have information about the Royal Polonia in your books?
Well, I don't, because it's not...
It's not native.
Native, but it the flower buds on that species form in the summer and they overwinter on the naked branches. And so I imagine, like a rhododendron or something, if the winter is too severe, it will kill the flower buds and prevent that from flowering. But then the leaf buds are hardier. And what a lot of people do in perennial gardens is grow that almost as a herbaceous perennial and cut it down to the ground every year, and it sprouts back out with... It can sprout 15 feet in a year, and it has huge leaves. It's really an amazing-looking thing, just have as kind of an accent in your garden. But then you don't have to worry so much. It's not a tree then, of course, but then you can grow it without worrying about winter killing, that kind of thing.
We're rapidly running out of time, so I'm going to say thank you to our listener in Belgium and move on to a caller in Kankakee on line 2. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
I wonder if I could trouble you for a suggestion for a substitution for an Austrian pine. I like everything about the Austrian pine except the susceptibility to fungus. And I can't hear you very well.
Austrian pine. Let's see. There's it's not real close to the Austrian pine. We like the concolor fir and the Serbian spruce here. Mugo pine doesn't get quite as large as the Austrian. For some
Does
thoughts.
Does the red pine do well out your way, Mike?
Well, it 50-50. We're trying one that is a dragon's eye red pine, and we really go the extra mile to try to protect it a little bit.
Would you say again the name of the spruce?
A Serbian spruce.
Serbian spruce. Okay. Concolor fir, Serbian.
Concolor fir, Serbian spruce, limber pine are the three conifers that we've been promoting. Well, the three that we have in our tree growing guide that we'd like to see more of in this
limber?
Area. Limber, L-I-M-B-E-R.
Okay.
Thanks
great.
Sounds
for the
good
call.
For a windy spot.
Yeah.
We've got to wrap it up here, but before we go, we spent a lot of time talking about trees and shrubs, and those are what we think of as the bones, the skeleton of the garden. But before we go, I want to ask Diane about some flesh and blood. What are you excited about this year in terms of flowers?
Well, I have to mention the perennial plant of the year. It's coming up much later in the season, but Phlox David, and that's a nice summer bones in the perennial garden. Very good mildew resistance, or even
good.
None
okay.
at all. It's a beautiful white, big, clubby head. So that's something that is being promoted through the Perennial Plant Association. But actually, to tell you the truth, I'm excited about wildflowers. I love this time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love going out and see all of the flowers and how they interweave in the woodland area. So I guess I'm really more excited about the spring things, although I have to put the plug in for the perennial plant.
Well, and also I know that Diane was admiring Bill Kalina's book on wildflowers that we have here in the studio. It's a beautiful book. So too, the native trees, shrubs, and vines. Bill, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste, for having me.
Mike Brunk, thank you. Diane Noland,
welcome.
Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Always fun.
It is, and short.
Yeah, today it was short, wasn't it? Yeah, it went so quickly.